Chuck and Buck in the Morning, Sports Radio 950 KJR. Bucky Jacobson's here. My name is Chuck Powell, and we will dive right in. The music tells us to do so. It's time to chat with our Seahawks insider. It's Greg Bell with Seahawks at 7. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Chuck. How's Seattle doing? Everybody okay still there?
I don't think Slick Hawk's all right. I mean, there's something off about him. I think that he's sort of mourning right now.
I want to strangle somebody.
Yeah, he wants to strangle somebody, Greg.
How about starting with the play callers?
You know what? When you do this job and you have different insiders on, I really do try to find a different way to approach each one of you. And, you know, with Hugh, I'm going to start a little bit later on with Russell. What'd you think of the quarterback play? But with you, all I could think about was the one question I want to ask him is, why is Chris Carson getting six carries, and why is this team still throwing the football despite an entire offseason trying to build it around the run?
First 87 plays of the season, Chuck, 63 of them passes, 23 of them runs. Chris Carson didn't touch the ball, didn't run the ball after the 11:51 mark of the second quarter. This is a one-score game, just like it was in Denver. Your lead running back doesn't touch the ball for the last 2.5 quarters. After the game, I said, what was up with Carson? Where did he go? Why wasn't he not only touching the ball, why wasn't he even on the field in the second half? And Pete Carroll said that he had to play more special teams this week because of injuries to the safeties and linebackers that they've had. And he was, quote, gassed, Carson was. Carson played 2 snaps last night on special teams.
Oh, wow.
So all I ask is, I mean, I've been doing this for a day or two, 20 years. There are ways for coaches not to answer a question or to hide the truth. But don't lie.
Yeah.
That's not true. And I could see it happen. We all could see it happening during the game. It makes you wonder what has happened to Chris Carson. Has he done something off the field? Has he done something in the locker room to put him in a doghouse? To Carson's credit, after the game, I spoke with him briefly, but not enough to really interview a quote, and he seemed in good spirits and didn't haul off on anybody or say anything negative. And actually, during the one drive, the Seahawks looked like an NFL offense when they went no huddle and scored the touchdown to Tyler Lockett in the fourth quarter. I had the binoculars on Carson on the sideline, and he was waving his arms and hands between plays to try to encourage the offense to keep the pace going and to keep moving quickly. And he was right beside the coaches. He was into the game. He wasn't sitting on the bench sulking. But there is definitely something going on besides special teams as to why Chris Carson's not on the field.
Now, he did start, so I mean, could something have happened in the middle of the game, Greg, that maybe they didn't like the way he ran, or did he didn't like the way he reacted to something? I mean, I looked up his last carry, and that was at the, 11:45 minute mark of the second quarter was his last carry, and it was a 3-yard run, and he got all 3 yards on pure effort because there was no hole there. So it didn't seem like he wasn't running hard. I mean, you got to wonder if something happened on the sidelines during the game that they didn't like the way he responded. Maybe he begged out of a game because he was tired, and then Pete just didn't want to put him back in.
I don't know. And I don't want to guess on that. Yeah. I do know he had 9 yards on the first play of the game. He got a first down on the next carry. First 3 plays, they ran the ball with him for 13 yards. And then he ran 3 plays. The entire team ran 3 plays. The rest ran the ball the rest of the first half 3 times. As many as the first 3 plays of the game. So, either you want to run the ball or you don't, and they don't. And they can say that they've redone their offense and they brought in a new coordinator and a new line coach, all to rededicate themselves to the run. But 75% of the time, it's a pass. And we're not talking about blowouts. Again, this is just like the Denver game in that it was a one-score game the entire time. Last night, we saw what happens when you rely on Russell Wilson. That not every time is he going to pull you out of the fire. Mm-hmm. The first times, and I can remember in a long time, first time since his rookie that he's thrown an interception return for a touchdown, but the first time I remember in a long time when the game was squarely on his shoulders to win in the fourth quarter, he failed, and he failed epically. That interception was a high school level decision to throw outside wide to Penny, a wide receiver split out wide with a cornerback who just baited him. He waited until the ball was in the air that jumped the route. He knew it was coming. And then on the very next series, to drop the ball and fumble to ruin their chances to come back. That those two plays were right after the Seahawks were back in the game 17-10 with the momentum. Interestingly, guys, Carroll, after almost every series of Russell Wilson's career, good or bad, rain or shine, he meets or talks to or looks at or and usually encourages Russell Wilson, checks in with him, usually claps, chewing gum, pat him on the back. After that fumble, sack fumble, the second consecutive turnover, I put my glasses on Carroll and on Wilson coming off the field. Carroll didn't even look at him. He had his hands on both hips. He didn't even move in his direction. He didn't say anything to him and didn't even change expression or look straight ahead. That, to me, was telling on how frustrating and upset he was. And it looks to me like it was more than just a Russell Wilson, but a Chris Carson as well.
Yeah, agreed. Russell obviously didn't have that good of a game. Can you let us know, did they say anything about their protection? Khalil Mack did end up being a big part of the game again and put a lot of pressure on him. Did they say they did anything right, or did they do what they were planning on doing as far as trying to keep him out of the game plan?
I thought they were okay in Mack in particular, in that he wasn't as decisive as Von Miller was the week before. But no, they said after getting, you know, they made their plays, but they didn't say much about the pass protection being an issue. I thought Russell Wilson caused at least two of the six sacks he had for holding on the ball too long. Mm-hmm. So that's five of the 12 sacks he's had this season, NFL leading 12 sacks through two games that he's just held onto the ball too long. The Bears were covering Seattle's receivers who are having trouble without Doug Baldwin there separating from defensive back. And that was a problem last night. And they definitely absolutely missed Doug Baldwin in that regard. I think, again, that if they run the ball, their pass protection issues will solve some of itself. And if you are not running the ball like they are not running the ball for the last 2 years, defenses will come after Russell Wilson and won't care what the rest of the play calls are. They don't have to read. They don't even have to react. They just go find number three. And this offensive line, Bucky, is not good enough to give guys a head start at getting after the quarterback.
Now, did I hear Pete after the game, Greg, say that he got involved in the game plan midway through the game, that he went to Brian Schottenheimer and said, we're going to take some chances deep, and that Brian couldn't get back into his rhythm? I mean, was that something that was actually said after the game, and is that something that Pete has done in the past as head coach? I guess it's his right, but it seems like you brought in an offensive coordinator for a reason, and to be 1.5 games into your season and start meddling with how he's calling a game seems rather odd to me.
Well, he did say that, but he could have said the field was blue last night, and that was kind of how the post-game scene.
Fair enough.
Right. That is his job. That is the offensive coordinator's job. But it is also the purview and job of the head coach in any team, and Carroll has done in the past, to intercede. He just presses a button on his headset and gets over to the play caller. He did say that in the beginning of the second half, he asked Schottenheimer to take shots down the field with a deep passing game to try to exploit what he thought were some weaknesses in Chicago's coverage and game plan, and that got him, Schottenheimer, off track to calling runs. Okay, what about in the second quarter?
Yeah.
What about after 11:51 left in the first half when you didn't give Chris Carson the ball? And that also doesn't explain why Chris Carson wasn't even on the field for a play in the second half.
How about two straight three and outs to start the second half with three passes and three passes? Not a single run tried in either one of those possessions.
How about one total yard in the third quarter in those six passes, plays? They ran six plays, all passes, two three and outs with one total yard.
Man. Greg Bell, our guest, of course, Seahawks at 7, our Seahawks insider. You can follow him at G Bell Seattle. Get the latest on the Seahawks from Greg, and of course, Seahawks at 7 every day at 7 o'clock here on Chuck and Buck in the mornings. Well, let's go ahead and shine some sort of light on this game. The defense actually played pretty well, considering all the parts that were missing. The Bears could not run the football against them, and I thought that they might not necessarily have their way, but certainly have an easier time than they did without 54 out there in the middle of the football field. So do we get a little bit of love for the defense here on a Tuesday morning?
Absolutely. Now, Mitch Trubisky sure helped them.
Yep.
He did not look good at all. He looked like he's regressed a little bit at the start of the second season of his career. But you're right, taking away the run was the game plan. Make Trubisky beat him. He couldn't. I mean, he had open receivers. He missed by 4 or 5 yards. It was a 3rd and 10, I think it was, in the third quarter, that he tried to just scramble up the middle and beat 4 guys rather than getting rid of the ball. The decisions like that that really helped the Seahawks. But when Austin Calitro and Michael Kendricks are your linebackers and you only give up 86 yards rushing and 10 points into the third quarter, you have to win that game. And we talked about how the Seahawks offense would have to carry the team, and I thought it might take up to 30 points to carry the team. They only needed 10 to be tied or in the lead into the fourth quarter, and the offense couldn't even do that. Mm-hmm. The defense did everything they could have hoped for, everything the Seahawks could have expected. Again, two epic failures by their usually clutch quarterback, and absolutely no running game despite whatever the rhetoric is, and that's the reason why they lost.
0-2 start, haven't even played your home opener yet to this season, so there is a long way to go. What is the outlook right now for the Seahawks here in 2018, 2 games into the campaign?
Well, it depends. If you want the empirical, are they going to make the playoffs, the outlook's not good.
Yeah.
Since 2002, when the NFL went to 14 divisions across the board, 11% of playoff teams started 0-2. Now, some of that, a very small percentage of that small percentage, 11%, was the 2015 Seahawks that started 0-2 after Cam Chancellor's holdout. Holdout ended after week 2. Chancellor comes back. They go on a run. They make the playoffs. Well, there's no Cam Chancellor coming back to this team. And Doug Baldwin's hurt. And Marshawn Lynch isn't here. And Richard Sherman isn't here. And Cliff Averill isn't here. And Michael Bennett isn't here. I will say that I've been saying this all along, is this team in November is going to be much different than this team in September. I don't know if it's going to be better, but it's going to be more developed, more experienced, and the coaches will know the players and vice versa, where you would think some of these play-calling puzzles will solve itself by then. The schedule also gets a little easier middle and end. Middle and the opponents are not as tough, and in the end, they have 4 of the last 5 at home to close the regular season. 4 of the first 6 here have been on the road. So if you're thinking that the season is playoffs or bust, you're feeling a little busted right now. But I think there's going to be progress by the end of the season that if it doesn't get them into contention, it gets them into at least respectability. Not that they're not respectable right now, but they are maddening to try to figure out what they're trying to do on offense.
Don't take it personally, Greg. He lies to all of us.
common man, you just tell me the truth or come around and then run to hide the truth, but just don't flat out lie. That's a basic ask, isn't it?
All right. Well, hey, thank you very much for checking in this morning. We appreciate it. Safe travels, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Thanks. Take care, guys.
Greg Bell, our Seahawks insider, Seahawks at 7 here on this Tuesday morning following the Monday Night Football loss to the Chicago Bears 24-17. Our quarterback joins us next. We talk Hugh Millen next.
This on one, ready? Monday Morning Quarterback, presented by Heritage Distilling, proud home of PSB Brown Sugar Bourbon and Batch Number 12. It's just not football without Batch Number 12 vodka, bourbon, or gin. Drink, pass, repeat.
It's Fact or Fiction presented by the Emerald Queen Casino. So be listening for your opportunity. Maybe $1,000 will be coming your way at the end of the week. Maybe $10,000 at the end of the year. You'll have 12 minutes to text Fact if you agree with the upcoming pick, or Fiction if you disagree. And that will make you eligible for that $1,000 weekly prize, all brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. So that's coming up in about 15 minutes from now, and I do believe it is Bucky Jacobson's turn. Yes, the big hand has pointed toward Bucky Jacobson to keep his winning streak alive and to save us in this early season struggles.
That we, got
going through.
We got it.
You got it?
Mm-hmm. Got it. You're a sure thing.
Okay.
Not really.
All right. Well, we're all depending on you very
okay,
much.
Okay, great.
But right now, it's time for Monday Morning Quarterback on a Tuesday. It is Hugh Millen in studio with us to provide analysis extraordinaire. What's going on, man?
You've been looking for another Hugh Millen. Good morning, guys.
Is there another Hugh Millen around?
My father.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
How is he at breaking down football?
Loves football.
Yeah?
Yeah. Breaking down part, maybe not so much.
But he loves it.
Taught you everything you know?
Huh?
Taught you everything you know?
He's a Michigan grad. Loves Go Blue. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, so, we can forgive him for that.
I kind of got weaned on that when I was a youngster. But.
So you're Hugh Jr.
I am. I'm a junior.
Yep.
Good morning, guys.
Good to see you.
How are you doing? Good to see you.
Let's jump into it because, we spent last week and I got to the end of the show. And I'm like, man, we didn't talk enough about the quarterback on Monday morning quarterback. Mm. But we had so many other things and so many other new players that we were evaluating for the first time in actual game action that I didn't feel too bad about it. I want to jump right in, though, on the quarterback this week and just get your overall thoughts on how well or how poorly he played last night, because he's a huge topic of conversation right now.
Well, I think it's tough to be a quarterback for that team right now. I think that we talked on yesterday morning about one of the matchup issues and the real keys of the game would be the Seahawks receivers going against a single safety defense and having opportunities, particularly on the outside, and one-on-one opportunities. I had studied the Bear game that they had against the Packers in week one and just kind of watching how they're playing defense. And it's like, wow, there's a lot of opportunities for one-on-one. And I think Seattle didn't do a great job of winning those matchups. And you just got to get a separation. I think Doug Baldwin was sorely, sorely missed.
Yeah.
I think it was hard to play in the first half with that relentless pass rush, but he's a $30 million quarterback, and he's going to be judged on how he makes plays when there's opportunities. And in that fourth quarter, those turnovers, everything you've heard from day one, hour one, minutes one, second one, from Pete Carroll has been the ball, the ball, ball, the ball. It's about the ball. They got signs all over the facility. It's the ball. And so philosophically, they can't have those type of turnovers. That's not in his nature. Guys are going to have that happen. But if you're asking me about last night, I would say really hard to play quarterback in the first half. It got easier. You notice Khalil Mack, in both games he's played now, he has not been the factor in the second half that he was in the first. He had an epic game against the Packers in the first half and then just kind of faded away. And so there was better opportunities. And you kind of know going into it that the fourth quarter, the pass rush is always going to be the weakest, particularly early in the season. And so for him to throw that pick six, just is bad football. And then for him to come back, have great protection, scram to his left, have an open receiver in John Brown, where he's in a throwing position. It's the National Football League, your top flight quarterback. He's running a crossing route. There's a window. He's got to turn that loose. I looked at it. I was like, how is he not doing that? You know, step up, throw. And that's what you expect top flight quarterbacks to do. And so that would have been a good play. That I'm not saying the degree of difficulty is low on that, but I'm saying it's medium. And it's what you expect of a top flight quarterback. The pick six. I'm sorry. I was talking about the fumble there. Pick six. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what happened on that play? I mean, that seems like one of those where it like, looked like a rookie mistake.
Yeah.
He hasn't done that since his rookie season. This is something he's typically very good at, is avoiding that play.
So what you have when you go in empty backfield, it's a 3-by-2. That's how the defense. The Seahawks have three receivers to the right of Russell, two to his left. The Bears, they have the package. When they study Seattle, it's like a player is able to lock in, okay, what have they shown out of 3-by-2? And so that subset of all the plays kind of narrows. So you're just thinking about the library of empty plays. The Seahawks there are running what seam hitch. The inside guys are running seams, and the outside guys are running hitches. And then the tight end, so the two widest guys in the formation are running that combination. The widest guy is running hitches, and then the inside guy's running seams. And then you have a third guy, of course, the third guy on the three receiver side, he's just going to run a little sit route in the middle. That combination they've shown. And if you look at how the Bears aligned, they played a cover three, but the curl flat defenders, the widest, if you put your four fingers out, your index finger and your pinky are the curl flat defenders. They were deeper. It's as if they knew the play. By alignment, the curl flat, you know, so they're cover three, and Prince Amukamara, he's a veteran. You know, he jumps routes. I can remember him in Husky Stadium jumping around on Jake Locker, you know, on a curl route. The Huskies were coming out of the lake. I mean, I remember it vividly. And he's been a guy that likes to jump routes. Now, when he sees a rookie tailback underneath him, this is my supposition. This is what I hope is an educated guess on how this played out. First of all, I look at their alignment. They look like Chicago's ready to play. Second of all, when you put a halfback out as the widest guy in the formation, you're looking to see how they align to it. And if they put a linebacker or a safety out there, then you know it's a man indicator. Well, this is clearly going to be zone. There's no doubt in Russell Wilson's mind it was going to be a zone. So what route tree do running backs have, particularly rookie running backs? They have a hitch and they have a go. That's it. So Prince Amukamara is going, you know, his film study, he's probably thinking this is a hitch because they've shown that from that formation. And when you see a Penny coming out and his shoulders are back and he doesn't look like he's driving to run the go, well, what else is left in the route tree? A hitch. Now, Marshall Faulk had a route tree. He could run skinny posts and he could do, and longtime fans remember Gary Anderson from the Chargers. He had a route tree. Why am I bringing up Gary Anderson and Marshall Faulk? Because I've watched pro football since the mid-80s, and there's not many guys who have a route tree from the running back position other than that. Maybe a slant. Show me a running back that does anything other than a go, a hitch, and a slant. You work at, you know, so I think that Amukamara had good reason, many, many good reasons to drive on that.
And he drove on it.
He drove on it, and he squatted. And in the end, Russell's just got to avoid that.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you, Chicago, they couldn't have aligned and played that play better if they were in the huddle. It's as if, you know, those advertising planes that go around the stadium?
Yeah.
It's as if they said, okay, Seattle is in empty, and they're running seam hits with the middle set. You know, they just knew the play. It wasn't just how they defended Penny. They defended the other four receivers that way, as if they knew the play.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of advertising, this team spent the entire offseason advertising that we are going to run the football. I mean, this wasn't just lip service. The acquisitions, Hugh, that they made in the offseason, we're going to draft a tight end that's run first. We're going to get rid of Jimmy Graham. We're going to let him go. And we're going to bring in Ed Dixon. And I know Dixon's not played, but the idea behind it was we're going to get a blocking tight end up there. We're going to draft a running back in the first round. We're going to bring in DJ Fluker. And I know he hasn't played either. But pretty much the resources that you had in the offseason, you have attributed to establishing this running game. So now it's no longer lip service. It's no longer some sort of we're trying to camouflage our real intent. You obviously are going to try to run the football. And to this point in the season, you've had 87 plays and 64 of them have been passes in two games that have been tight throughout the game. I mean, we're not talking about two blowouts here, Hugh. So, I mean, it's almost like, okay, I'm a great artist, and I want to be a dancer, and I go out and buy easel and paintbrushes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's not adding up right now. Why is that not adding up?
That's beautiful. That's well played, sir. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll say this. I think that every Seahawk fan, I count myself in that set, every Seahawk fan needs answers on this, demand answers. Tom Kreese. I want answers.
You want the truth?
I want the truth, and I want answers.
You can't handle the truth.
Maybe I can't, but I want somebody to try and deliver it anyways. Chris Carson has for the seat. Well, he's 6 carries yesterday. Now he had 4 yards per attempt. That's serviceable. That's enough to make the play action game work and to take some pressure off. He had a higher with 5.2 last week.
I think it was even better than that. I think it was 7.2. 7 carries. Well, he was 70.
I beg your pardon. The team was 5.2.
Yeah.
I wanted to be conservative in that. His season total suggests he needs the ball. Mm-hmm. You cannot have a head coach just come up into a press conference in Monday Night Football and then just say, well, he was gassed and he didn't get the ball for 11 minutes to go in the second quarter. That cannot be tolerable for anybody who's a fan of the Seattle Seahawks. No, you got to tell me more. What? Because you got to carry out the follow-up questions. If that is true, then Chris Carson is not an NFL running back. He's not an NFL running back. I played with 3 Hall of Famers, Emmitt Smith, Eric Dickerson, and Terrell Davis, and another few that made at least a Pro Bowl. This running back needs to get the ball. Mm-hmm. And if the head coach is going to walk up and say, well, he was gassed, on account of what? Because he played special teams, and he played 2 special teams?
He played 5 the week before.
No. Respectfully, no. That there has to be something because if he's healthy and he wasn't playing because his fitness level doesn't allow him to take a carry past 11 minutes to go in the second quarter, he's not an NFL back. Just cut him. Just save yourself the freaking trouble and the anguish. Just move on.
Yeah. But we're not buying that as the reason.
Well, how could you?
Yeah, okay.
How could you? Look at his physical condition.
Yeah.
So
he has, like, negative body fat.
If somebody wants to say that, you know, he's got a shoulder that Pete Carroll doesn't want people to know about because he's going to get banged. All right, fine. But that's a squirrely way to go about it, to say, well, he was gassed. I've never heard of that in my life. Has anybody ever heard of a potentially top-flight running back not getting the football for 44 minutes of a game, and then the head coach saying, well, he was tired?
Yeah.
No. Don't accept that, Chuck.
Have you ever, you see guys pat on their helmet, you know, receivers maybe have ran a few go routes, or running backs have ran the ball 4 or 5 times in a row, and they need a breather.
Correct.
Do coaches ever get pissed if a guy calls for a breather, wants a breather, and we don't know if this happened or not? And he's like, what do you mean you need a breather? And then I'm like, all right, well, if you're too tired after 6 carries, then you can just sit the bench the rest of the day.
Yeah, sometimes depending on the game situation. I can remember we're driving to try and tie up the Jets, and Irving Fryer, when I was with the Patriots, do you remember that name, Irving Fryer?
Number one overall pick.
Yeah. He started to take himself out because he had caught a couple passes. I ran over. We're in a hurry up. I ran to the numbers, grabbed him by the back of, you know, like horse collar.
Yeah.
I horse collared him and yanked him back on the field. Get your ass.
Anywhere.
You're not going to take a break.
Yeah.
And then he caught the next pass for a comeback. Yeah. I think in the heat of the moment, you consider what's the circumstance. So, yeah. But
then at halftime.
I don't have a problem with him. Even a series, in a worst case scenario, let's say he's just, you know, he hasn't built up a stamina, or he's the type of guy that doesn't have great stamina. If he needs to take a series off, fine. But we can't accept this. We can't just move on from this, in my opinion.
No, I don't think we are going to either. Hmm. Yeah, I could see maybe like a butt chewing at halftime and then get back out there in the second half. But yeah. I don't know. We don't know the answer to it. We'll continue to speculate because that's what we do in Sports Talk Radio. That's the fun part of this. All right, we got more with Hugh coming up in a little bit, but right now it's time for a little fact or fiction.
It's time for fact.
Just a fact, Jack! Just a fact, Jack!
Or fiction, powered by the Emerald Queen Casino, the entertainment capital of the Northwest.
It is a fact!
Fiction presented by the Emerald Queen Casino. 13 weeks throughout the football season, we'll be making a pick at 7:35 in the morning every day, and then there'll be a show. There'll be a time in every show where they're going to do the exact same thing. It's based on an upcoming college or pro game, either against the spread, straight up, total, whatever. Listeners, you will have 12 minutes to respond. You text fact if you agree with the pick or fiction if you disagree. And oh, by the way, just because, let's just say, one of the shows is struggling to get a lot of picks right. Well, that's your honeypot. Just pick against them.
Right.
Yeah. Don't sit there and wait around for, let's say, the morning show only has one person getting picks right. Don't sit around and wait for things to change. Pick against them.
Pick against them.
This is your opportunity to really cash in.
Right.
That guy, Powell, is 0 for 3. He's never going to get one right this entire year. Pick against me. Make some money off me.
Yeah. You like to disagree with us. This is a time where you can disagree with us and make $1,000.
Now, Bucky actually is on a roll right now. Two in a row. He's the only one of us with a winning record to this point. And it's Bucky's turn.
Well,
so now you're really
thing.
In a dilemma here, listener.
Yeah.
Just when you got comfortable disagreeing with us, Bucky has to pop off and get a couple right.
Pop off and get
what
a couple right.
What a jackass.
Right. Yep.
Thanks a lot.
I'm that guy.
Thanks for ruining the formula.
Yep.
All right. So what do you got for us today?
Well, today, this week or this, yeah, this week coming up, boy, there's a lot of games with big spreads. And none of them do I feel 100% confident with. But the one I'm going to go with, I think Philadelphia is going to cover the 6.5-point spread over the Indianapolis Colts.
They're
at home. Carson Wentz is back.
Carson Wentz.
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to... I hope they're not rushing him back because I think they're one of the few teams in the National Football League that doesn't have to do that. But it sort of feels to me like we're rushing him back.
A little bit. I don't think they liked that loss last week. Obviously, nobody likes a loss, but... And I've watched some stuff on TV with him, and he doesn't necessarily look as mobile. Doesn't look like he's moving around quite as well.
He doesn't look fully recovered,
but
I'll put it that way.
I think he's going to be a little more careful with this running. I mean, if it's wide open, I think he can still get you 5 yards or, you know, get a first down here and there. He throws the ball. He throws the ball well.
Oh, he's excellent. That's why I want to make sure he's healthy if I'm the Philadelphia Eagles before I bring him back. I mean, that's franchise player there.
Yeah.
That's a guy that's going to... As long as he's healthy, he's going to be in some MVP conversations in his career.
Right.
All right, you got 12 minutes to text the word fact if you agree, or fiction if you disagree with Bucky. Again, he's taking the Eagles this week against the Indianapolis Colts. They are giving 6.5.
Yep.
Is that the number? Six and a half to the Indianapolis Colts. Next time you have an opportunity to play is at 11:50 this morning with Cliff and Puck. Ian at 2:35 and Softy and Dick at 4 o'clock. So, play fact or fiction, take advantage of an opportunity to win $1,000, and at the end of the season, maybe even 10 grand if you play enough and win enough. Fact or fiction, all of it brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. All right, more with Hugh coming up here in a moment. I want Hugh to play the blame pie game. We'll see if this offensive line is as bad as the stats indicate. And much, much more with our quarterback on a Tuesday, Monday morning quarterback.
It's the Monday Morning Quarterback, presented by Heritage Distilling. It's just not football without batch number 12 on your home for the 12th man and the NFL. Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
He was a little gassed from working on special teams and helping us. We had some guys that were out, so he had kind of double dip and really, I wanted to see how we could do with Rashad and give him some playing time, get him out there.
You know those carbon monoxide detectors, smoke detect?
Yeah.
Something's got to go beep, beep. Something's got to go. Your BS meter's got to just be going haywire right now.
Yeah, that was straight BS. I don't know if you heard Greg Bell. Greg Bell was like, don't just flat out lie to our face. I mean, we get it. You got to keep some stuff incognito, but I brought up earlier, I wouldn't be surprised if he actually pops up on the injury report. I mean, just possibly. Who knows?
Maybe there's an explanation. Maybe begged out. Maybe he has an injury. That's something that explains it better than that.
If I'm Chris Carson, I'm going up to him, coach. Like, of all the lies in all the universe, throwing me under the bus saying I'm gassed.
Yeah.
That, I guess I could think of worse.
Yeah. I mean, for a... What was
He's
our conversation?
Too much of an idiot to remember the playbook. I mean, I guess there's some lies that could be worse, but
that would be it.
Well, I will say this: last week it was all about how did Chris Carson only get 7 carries? Coach was right here last week, and he goes, "How many?" We're like, 7. He goes, yeah. Oh, that's not enough. And then he got 6 this week.
Yeah.
6. He actually got less.
Yeah, right.
Fewer
yeah.
than what he did a week ago. Hugh Millen is here. It's a Monday morning quarterback on a Tuesday. It's brought to you by Heritage Distilling, no matter what week day it is. Proud home of BSB, brown sugar bourbon, and batch number 12. It's just not football without batch number 12 vodka, bourbon, or gin. Drink, pass, repeat. Heritage Distilling. All right, so we were playing a little bit of the blame pie a little bit earlier in the show in terms of you look at this game and you see 6 sacks, and I heard Collinsworth talking about it with Eli Manning on Sunday night. You watch a quarterback get pressured, and you pretty much put all the blame on the offensive line. I went further and said I'm not putting as much blame on the offensive line as I have in the past, that's for sure. My blame pie is, you know, maybe 50% as opposed to 90 in the past on the offensive line. I think there are a lot of factors that went into the pressure that Russell faced last night and the 6 sack total that he ended up with, and I think he's part of that blame pie. But I wanted to ask you, I wanted you to get in on this conversation. What's going on that a team can get sacked 6 times in back-to-back games?
Well, first of all, I want to quickly, on this topic, I want to quickly make mention of opinion I have about the Bears. That acquisition of Khalil Mack just infused just massive endorphins and energy into that. I mean, it's like it was just like straight heroin to that club. I mean, in every way, you saw the energy. I think that they now everybody else thinks of themselves as an elite pass rushing team, and so they're gonna, you know, that's what they see in the mirror. And Mack is I don't know. I think that it puts pressure on Trubisky. You know, like it's a statement. We're in year one with Nagy, year two with a quarterback who's the number 2 overall pick in the draft, and we're here to win now.
Yeah.
This is not a 4-year. We're here to win now. And I think that locker room just sensed that surge. Like, wow, they believe in us now. The players feel like that's what. And so there's no doubt there's that type of communication going on. So I think that they had. Obviously led by Mack, they had an approach that was really smart against Russell. Because when you look at those sacks, they're coming in, the pocket is kind of compressing, there's some patience, they're pushing, they're not getting too far up the field and allowing Russell Wilson to get the exit lanes. The inside guys are kind of two-gapping in there. They're waiting for, they're pushing the pocket, but they're not trying to win in a single gap. They're mindful of Russell's escape hatches. And so I think that they have a team effort. The front four, each one of these, I keep looking for the guy who's breaking down. And, you know, for the most part, it's just like a team squeeze, you know what I'm saying? And so it's kind of like how does a good team squeeze on a punt return or a kickoff return, you know, like you just stay in your lanes and squeeze to the ball. And then and so I think that what you saw there was a good plan to deny Russell the eject button.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep him in the canopy, man. You're crashing and burning, you're going into the ocean. You're not getting out in a parachute. You're taking this thing in. You're taking it all the way down.
Yeah.
And so, now the separation, Baldwin has a way of righting a lot of wrongs. And I think that the Bears came in pretty aggressive in terms of their coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And Seattle wasn't able to win there. So no doubt the offensive line, Russell, and you saw CJ Procise, very very meek blitz pickup, getting shoved back into Russell. Bad. So if we're talking about blame pie,
he by the way had as many snaps as Carson last year.
Yeah, there's a lot of eating the pie. You know, there's a lot of people with blueberry sauce on the side of their mouth.
Yes, there is.
So so you're gonna pin me down. That's why you. You pay me this meekly sum.
The big bucks.
Yeah. The offensive line is still number 1.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Okay. Russell Wilson is two, but a higher two than we've seen. I think you're right in that regard. I think without getting separation, that would be three, and then some running back mistakes, I would put four. As far as the total impact, I would say I'm going to throw half of that, a full 50% on the offensive line.
Full 50.
That's 50.
That's about where I was, yeah. Maybe even a little more. But not the typical he doesn't stand a chance kind of starts that we have seen in the last 3 years.
I'm going to go, all right, I'm going to go 21 on the quarterback and 19 on the receivers.
All right. What about Nice?
And I'm going to go 10 on the running.
Okay.
Did I say that right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 21.
That was right.
Yeah. Okay. And then, and I don't know, maybe I should do more like 23 on the quarterback, 22 on the receivers, and 5 on the running backs.
Okay.
That's the pie. There it is.
That's the pie. There's the blame pie.
Is that specific enough for you?
Yes, it is perfect. Perfectly executed. All right, coming up next, we've got the Ocho, the 8 top stories of the day, and about 6 of them are Seahawks stories. Sports Radio 950 KJR.